Good evening and welcome to the local news. Today is Wednesday, October 29th, and I'm Nat Cardos reporting for KMUD. In tonight's news, Prop 50, what to know. Halloween sees influx of wedding ceremonies at Humboldt County Courthouse and County Clerk's Recorder's Office accommodates. Lease for Access Humboldt terminated at College of the Redwoods 3 years in. So stay tuned. Those stories and more coming up.
Redwood Community Radio acknowledges that its transmitter sites are located on the unceded territory of the Tsingkyon, Wailaki, Wiat, Wilkut, and Kato people. We honor ancestors past, present, and emerging, and acknowledge the ongoing cultural, spiritual, and physical connection these tribes have to this region.
On November 4th, California voters will decide whether or not to pass Proposition 50, also known as the Election Rigging Response Act. Prop 50 is a countermeasure led by Governor Gavin Newsom that would allow California to temporarily adopt a congressional district map drawn by the state legislature from 2026 to 2030. The proposition intends to offset other recently changed maps in other states like Texas to counteract the 5 Republican seats recently gained by the state in August. If it doesn't pass, California's congressional districts would remain the same as they were drawn by California's Citizen Redistricting Commission. KMUD News spoke with Neil Fornaciari, a commissioner of the California Citizens Redistricting Commission, where he shared his criticism of the proposition.
Citizens Redistricting Commission is made up of 14 members of the public without any deep, none of them with deep political affiliations. There's 5 Democrats, 5 Republicans, and 4 in neither of those parties. They all happen to be no party preference. And we worked together for 16 and a half months, gathering, as I said, over 35,000 pieces of public input to put together our maps. And we drew those maps based on that public input. We got a lot of input from the coastal counties, especially Mendocino, Humboldt, Del Norte. And that input was, our counties want to be whole. They want to be connected from Marin to Del Norte, and we don't want to be connected with inland counties like Shasta, you know, cities like Redding. We want to be separate. And so the maps proposed by the legislature didn't take into any consideration any of that, any public input at all. They were just drawn for partisan purposes only and just cut up communities randomly. If you can see in the maps that Mendocino County's been split. Again, counties are put in the North State, counties are put together that don't have really anything in common or any interests in common, and again, for partisan purposes.
Supporters of the proposition argue that it's necessary to combat other states doing the same thing for Republicans. California and Texas aren't the only states in the redistricting fray either. At the end of September, Republican Missouri Governor Mike Kehoe signed a revised congressional map into law, which was designed to give Republicans all but 1 of the 8 seats in the state. Utah and South Carolina have also already passed new congressional voting maps, and Colorado, Nebraska, Illinois, New York, Maryland, and Florida are all in the process of considering redrawing districts. KMUD News spoke with Mario Fernandez, the chair for the Humboldt County Democratic Central Committee, about his understanding of the urgency for Proposition 50.
We can look at that through the actions that have taken place federally and as responses in other states. When we're using ICE to gaslight immigrants, not just immigrants that are here legally, but also who are undocumented, to put that type of fear in our system of democracy to further gaslight people and those of LGBTQ identity, gay, trans, lesbian, et cetera, it hurts in a very visceral level to see how afraid people are for being who they are. And again, that's an identity-based issue. But aside from that, there are also the issues around our budget, which, you know, is, as we're aware, or at least as I've been told, you know, a budget is, you know, the follow-through on our ideology. And so as we take away from social programs, as we take away from those safety nets, again, people are now not only fearing for who they are, but how they will survive. You know, we hear about the potential increase here in healthcare premiums in this next week as Congress is, again, still on its hiatus, it seems. People are going to be hurting, and this is all as the result of a Republican-led Congress.
Some critics argue that it would undermine the independent commission and could set a dangerous precedent for other politicians that would want to gain partisan power. Another issue some take with it is that it's unnecessary, and if Democrats wanted to take back seats, they should be able to do it with a good campaign. Fornaciari elaborates more.
Gerrymandering is not a Democratic or Republican thing, right? It's whoever is in power is going to do it because they want to stay in power. I think the beauty of the independent commission is that the independent commission does not cannot consider the location of a politician or a candidate when drawing maps and cannot consider the political affiliations of candidates or incumbents or party makeup of districts. And if you look at the districts that the commission drew, they were some of the most competitive congressional districts in the country. And so conceit, you know, again, more analysis have been done in the press that the Democrats could take back 4 or 5 Republican seats with the current maps if they put forward good candidates and good campaigns. So, I mean, there's really no need to go down the road of Prop 50 if the Democrats want to gain 4 or 5 seats in the House.
Some supporters argue that it's necessary, even if it doesn't look good, and argue that in times that the status quo has been upended, it's important to still defend the state from the current administration's trampling of rights. Fernandez explains more on the response Prop 50 presents.
This isn't something that I think anyone is excited for. Nobody woke up and said, hey, you know what? I want to gerrymander California. Now, granted, there are probably some in politics who would like to say, like, yes, there should be more of my party. But I don't feel that this is the response that we should be going to get there. Instead, it should be having conversations like I've been having with folks for the last few years as chair. But we are at a point where it's critical that we need to respond to this dismantling of our democracy at a national level by the current administration to say, if I don't get what I want vis-a-vis the federal administration at this moment, then I'm going to make it more difficult for you, state of Texas. I'm going to make it more difficult for you, state of Missouri. Give me what I want. And so they capitulate. And so our response is to say, well, if we're not in the presidency, then we need to have at least a chamber of the House or Congress to provide a stopgap.
As of recording, polls for early voting have been opened for the 2025 California special election. To find poll locations for voting in Humboldt County, the website is humboldtgov.org/2589/vote/centers. Again, that's humboldtgov.org/2589/vote/centers. To find poll locations for voting in Mendocino County, the website is mendocinocounty.gov/government/assessor-county-clerk-recorder-elections/election-precincts. Again, that's mendocinocounty.gov/government/assessor-county-clerk-recorder-elections/election-precincts. Follow KMUD News for more coverage on upcoming elections. On October 7th, College of the Redwoods issued a termination letter to Access Humboldt stating, quote, the lease will be terminated due to the planned demolition of the RBC-A building. As such, the premises must be fully vacated by the lessee no later than May 31st, 2026. The termination of the 5-year lease comes 3 years into the lease. Access Humboldt provides public access broadcasting to Humboldt County, and they broadcast meetings, educational content, and community-created content centered in freedom of expression, government transparency, and localism. Now having to relocate only adds to the issues that the institution has been facing, as they've also been losing funding for the past several years. KMUD News spoke to Christina Jeffers, Executive Director of Access Humboldt, for more information about what Access Humboldt does.
So Access Humboldt is your local PEG station. That's public access, educational and governmental channels. And we're not to be confused with like PBS. We're public access, meaning we give access to any resident in Humboldt County to be on cable streaming and low power FM.
Access Humboldt needs to vacate their location at College of the Redwoods by May 31st and are currently looking to the community for a space that can house all that they have. What needs to be moved out of the building includes a television studio, radio station, the Libby Maynard podcasting studio, a computer lab, offices, classrooms, and more. Jeffers elaborates more on the kind of space they need.
Yeah, we're looking for between 8,000 to 10,000 square feet. And that way we won't lose any of our educational hands-on programs. A large part of what we do is we educate the community on how to create content and how to be in broadcasting, both on television and on the radio. And that requires some space and definitely a studio where they could use the standardized equipment for broadcast.
If they're unable to find a new location, the broadcasting group can face interruptions in service, scaling back, and more. This comes at a time that public media is already under attack, with the closure of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting occurring earlier this fall.
There's a lot at risk. We will have to scale back drastically. My staff will probably have to work from home, which doesn't sound bad to some people, but it's really not good for our format. We stand to lose, we stand to have interruption in programming, which is, you know, like all those government meetings you see on TV, that's us. Any educational content you see or public access content on channels Wave 7 and channels 8, 10, 11, and 12, that's all us. So there could be interruptions in service. There could be interruptions in shows and showing a lot of reruns. A lot could happen. Public access programming is extremely important to our society. First of all, we only serve Humboldt County, and those who have access to the station need to be Humboldt County residents. That means that all of the information that we put on our airwaves is by Humboldt for Humboldt. It increases civic engagement. It informs the public of local government meetings and things that are going on. We're not just like Wayne's World. You know, we have several things that we do. We also have distance learning on our education channel, and we are actually upholding your free speech as per the Cable Act from the 1980s. You know, with YouTube and some of these other social media platforms, people argue, well, I can just distribute my video there and I have my free speech. But that's not true. Those channels do not have to give you an equitable access. They can throttle your voice down. They can commercialize your voice. They can commoditize your viewer. We will never do that to you. We are non-commercial and we hold an equitable platform for everyone. And we are neither left nor right, rich nor poor. We do not discriminate against anybody. If you create it in a format that we can play, it'll go on the airwaves.
During this time, Access Humboldt encourages community members to come and use their production facilities while they still have the building. Jeffers explains more.
Right now, community members could be really supportive by coming out and using the facility while it's here through May. If you're feeling a little discouraged lately, like maybe your voice hasn't been heard or your part of the story in the national dialogue isn't being represented, come out to the station, make a show, have it air. It'll feel really cathartic. We do not curate the voice. We do not encourage one voice over the other. So it's really just whoever shows up to make TV is what shapes our channels. We do cover 7 cities and 3 JPAs worth of meetings. So I think we have some pretty broad coverage there. We could even cover more. We do have a limited capacity right now because our funding has been decreasing over the last several years, but we want people just to actively use the station while it's here. Come grab a membership or make a donation to help us with the move. You can even come out and help us pack and move when we find our new place.
For more information, the website is accesshumboldt.net. While some folks in Humboldt County might be preparing for trick-or-treaters this Halloween, the Humboldt County Clerk Recorder's Office prepares for an influx of people looking to get married or renew their vows on the holiday. The office will be open for extended hours on October 31st, and in-person civil wedding ceremonies will be available at 2 locations, the Humboldt County Courthouse in Eureka or the Humboldt County Fairgrounds in Ferndale. KMO News spoke to Juan Pablo Cervantes, the Recorder and Registrar of Voters for Humboldt County, for more information on getting hitched this Halloween.
There's how we used to prepare and how we prepare now. So Halloween is actually our most popular wedding day throughout the year. It's the day that we get the most wedding licenses issued and the most wedding ceremonies performed in the courthouse. You'd figure it would be Valentine's Day or some other day, but no, Halloween is the day. When it comes to the way that we used to gear up is we would just kind of treat it as business as usual. We go through our regular marriage license issuing process, which we're doing now for folks to be able to get married like on their own. And then we'd have 2 to 4 weddings that we'd be able to do on that day. That'd be that. One of the new things that we did in February for Valentine's Day is we started looking to see how we could best showcase the county and provide a service to our constituents, because Humboldt County is like a little unique. And so we did Valentine's Day weddings at a couple of beaches in county parks and really showcased our county parks as wedding venues. And from there, Sandra and Bryn, who work in my office, took this idea and were like, Halloween, we've got to do something for Halloween. Humboldt County is the kind of county where you have folks that would really lean into that. And so we've created an incredible environment for just beautiful, gothic, vampy, but still classy civil ceremonies. We're going to have two locations. We're going to have one location at the county courthouse where we've set up these incredible bouquets and candles. We're also doing weddings at the fairgrounds. We're collaborating with the fairgrounds, but we were able to secure the old schoolhouse there. And so we have over 100 candles. We're really designing it in like a really classy way, and folks will be able to have their weddings officiated there.
To get married on Halloween, people can book no later than Thursday, October 30th. A marriage license is required for a wedding to be performed. Ceremony bookings have to be done in person at the Humboldt County Clerk Recorder's Office, and the fee is $100. Spanish language ceremonies are also available upon request. Working with the Humboldt County Fairgrounds is part of an initiative to showcase more locations around the county as different possible wedding venues and engage community members with the area. Cervantes elaborates more.
So that's going to be at the fairgrounds, and the scaregrounds is a privately run event, which is a pretty big, really cool haunted house. We've been out there since then, and they do some pretty cool stuff. We've had some people are planning their weddings with that in mind, and so folks will, you know, go get dinner in Ferndale or, you know, eat before their wedding in Ferndale or after their wedding in Ferndale, because the fairgrounds are right there. And then in the evening, they're planning on doing kind of like a little reception at the scaregrounds, just really leaning into that Halloween ceremony.
A marriage license can be obtained up to 90 days before the ceremony date, and despite needing to be in person to complete it, the application process can be started online at tinyurl.com/humcowedding.
Just that we're excited to do it, the more people lean into it and participate, the more we're able to do these events going forward. I know there's some folks asking us for kind of like a winter holiday theme going into December. It's another popular time for folks to get married. And yeah, we're looking to do more with what we have and to meet people where they're at, whether that's geographically or in the spirit of what they're looking for from their government.
For more information, the number is 707-445-7593, or the website is humboldtgov.org/clerk-reporter. That's humboldtgov.org/clerk-reporter. In state news, tips for navigating California health plans during open enrollment. Public News Service's Suzanne Potter reports.
Many Californians are narrowing down their choice of health insurance plan just in time for open enrollment, and experts have recommendations to help avoid missteps. A new survey shows 43% of people say they regret a health care decision they made after being misled by inaccurate information. Dr. Rhonda Randall with United Healthcare says her biggest piece of advice is to start your research now using reputable sources.
This is an important decision for your health and financial health. So you want to have enough time to compare the benefits, services, the upfront and out-of-pocket costs, and new offerings that may be available to you.
She adds people need to make sure their physician is on the plan and that it covers their medications. It's also important to consider not just the monthly premium, but the amounts of deductibles, copays, and coinsurance. Explanations for these terms and more are online at justplainclear.com and medicaremadeclear.com. Medicare open enrollment is now through December 7th. Private employers usually allow changes for several weeks before the end of the year. People on the Affordable Care Act marketplace, known here as Covered California, can enroll or change plans from November 1st through January 31st. Jessica Altman with Covered California says nearly 2 million Californians on the ACA individual marketplace plans are likely to face a huge increase in costs unless Congress renews the tax credits due to expire this year.
We're looking at the tax credits getting much less generous. Premiums themselves are rising more than they would otherwise because of the instability caused by those tax credits expiring. What that equates to is an average of 97% increase, basically doubling.
These credits are a key sticking point in the current government shutdown. Democrats in Congress are demanding action to extend the credits before they agree to fund the government, something Republicans have rejected. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
In national news, shutdown enters fourth week of stalemate as more people feel pain. Dems prepare legislation to keep food aid flowing. KPFA's Christopher Martinez reports.
As the federal government entered its fourth week of shutdown, the Senate again held a vote on a Republican measure to reopen the government. But the 13th time was not a charm, and the measure failed on a vote of 54 to 45. More and more people are feeling the heat as the federal government shutdown drags on with no end in sight. Internal Revenue Service worker Tammy Norton visited a food bank since she's not being paid.
I'm just hoping for the best. I'm hoping that they can come to some resolution. You know, it's the Democrats against the Republicans. They're fighting against each other, but they're not thinking about us civilized Americans out here. They're not thinking about us and what we're going through.
The chair of the House Republican Conference, Congressmember Lisa McClain, says millions of people are going to feel the pain firsthand.
This week, more than any other week, the consequences become impossible to ignore. As of yesterday, more than 10,000 flights have been delayed because of staffing shortages. By the end of this week, nearly 2 million paychecks will be missed by Americans. And by Saturday, 42 million Americans will lose their SNAP benefits.
Those SNAP benefits, food aid for low-income families, also known as food stamps, have never lapsed before, even during government shutdowns. But the Trump administration is refusing to dip into a contingency fund to keep the assistance flowing. That has sparked outrage from Democrats, and it's led some states to file a lawsuit against the administration, including California. State Attorney General Rob Bonta spoke at a news conference in Sacramento.
The vast majority of SNAP recipients are families with kids, elderly individuals, and people with disabilities. These are our most vulnerable. Society should be judged on how we treat the most vulnerable. Trump gets an F for what he is doing here to our kids and to our most vulnerable Americans.
Republican lawmakers continue to blame Democrats for the shutdown. Republican House Speaker Mike Johnson says Republicans are not making any demands. They just want to reopen government. He suggests hidden motives for the Democrats.
They fear the Marxist insurgents like Mondani more than they fear families and children going hungry from lapsed benefits that keep food on their tables. They simply fear losing their own political positions next November if they don't appease the angry far-left base right now.
Democrats say they're holding their votes to press for action to prevent the end of health care subsidies that could cause premiums to skyrocket, leaving millions of people without health insurance. As for SNAP benefits, Democrats have another plan. Chuck Schumer is the Senate Democratic leader.
So today, Democrats will introduce a bill that would extend the SNAP funding and WIC to make sure no child goes hungry, no family goes without food, no lapse will happen. And it will get broad, if not universal, support in our caucus, and we will try to get it passed on the floor. We will try to get it passed on the floor.
Reporting for Pacifica Radio News KPFA, I'm Christopher Martinez.
And in national Native news, Antonia Gonzalez reads today's headlines.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Thousands of Native people across the Mountain West are among those who will lose Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, or SNAP, food benefits if the federal government shutdown continues. The Mountain West News Bureau's Daniel Spalding reports tribal officials are concerned about cuts to programs that were already stretched thin.
SNAP will run out of money on November 1st if the shutdown continues. And nearly a quarter of Indigenous households use SNAP benefits, double the national rate. Julie Keller leads food services at Nemipu Health on the Nez Perce Reservation in Idaho.
Feeding families is very expensive, and people are struggling to make ends meet. And these programs help people provide basic nutrition for their whole family.
Keller says more tribal members have been signing up to receive food benefits out of fear that they may soon be canceled. Five states in the Mountain West have issued warnings for SNAP recipients. Some states, like Colorado, are providing emergency funding for alternate food sources. Meanwhile, a group of Democratic leaders in several states are suing the federal government over the suspension of benefits. I'm Daniel Spaulding.
The Cherokee Nation declared a food emergency Tuesday due to the federal government shutdown in response to the expected loss of SNAP benefits. The Oklahoma tribe is making more than $6 million in emergency relief funding available. Cherokee Nation Principal Chief Chuck Hoskin Jr. explained the tribe's response in a social media post, saying they'll protect those most at risk of hunger.
We will not turn our backs on people in need as the federal government remains gridlocked. Our response may not be perfect, but we will not stand back and watch people suffer.
Other tribes across the country have also declared an emergency due to the federal government shutdown. The Western disaster relief effort has moved to its next phase. Earlier this month, hurricane-force winds and floods forced more than 1,000 people from their homes. Many families were sent to mass shelters in Anchorage. This week, the city has begun to transition them into temporary housing. KMBA's Rhonda McBride visited the Egan Convention Center downtown, where families are preparing to move on.
Little boys and girls are sad. They're homesick.
Tessie Chanarak is one of the counselors from South Central Foundation, watching out for families at the Egan Center. She says counselors have been keeping kids occupied with games, and it's helped that Halloween is around the corner.
You know, Halloween is one of the fun seasons of the year because lots of candy. We got some costumes and we've got some hats and trick-or-treating bags. So anything for the little kids too. So they seem to be more at home than their parents.
Chanarak says at first when families moved into the shelter, the reality of what they had escaped had not yet sunk in. She saw families look at videos and photos captured on their cell phones over and over, as if to try to understand what they had experienced.
Can't believe the typhoon kicked in. I can't believe our homes floated away. It's like, that really happened. And yesterday, when I was checking with folks, they're crying. They're tired.
Despite that, Chanarek says families have held up remarkably well. But she's glad they'll soon be transferred to temporary housing so they can begin their recovery. She says she's grateful for the elders because they've been a calming influence on everyone.
I really do admire that. That gives me a tool that I can use, taking it one day at a time.
Chanarak wears a pair of angel wings that came from a Halloween costume, known to the kids as Terrific Tessie. She's originally from Tuxuk Bay, one of the communities also in the storm's path. She says she feels honored to be of help as both a counselor and a speaker of the Yupik language. In Anchorage, I'm Rhonda McBride.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
That's all for tonight's broadcast. Thanks for listening. Thanks to our engineer, Larry Lashley, and thanks to our reporters, Suzanne Potter, Christopher Martinez, and Antonia Gonzalez. KMUD News is online, and you can find us on KMUD.org and now streaming on most podcast platforms, including Apple Podcasts and Spotify, where you can download our stories and newscasts for offline listening during your rural commutes. You can also follow us on social media. If you have questions or suggestions, you can give us a call at 707-923-2605 or send an email to news@kmud.org. Redwood Community Radio, Inc. is funded by Press Forward, the national movement to strengthen communities by reinvigorating local news. Learn more at pressforward.news. Reporting for KMUD, I'm Nat Cardos.